Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie. Hey, Darkhearts.
Hey, Darkhearts.
Real quick, just a reminder, you have until Thursday, so the day after this podcast comes out, June 30th at 11:59 p.m. to let us know if you've rated and reviewed wherever you listen to this podcast, and then we'll have our drawing at some point. You know, I think, I don't know, you know how to do the, like, randomizer thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we can maybe do that and record it.
Yeah, like, record it, and then, like, I don't know if we do a Facebook Live. I don't know if there's a way to share that then to Instagram.
We're old. We have to figure all these things out.
Listen, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll post it somewhere when we do the drawing, and we'll announce the winners on, like, our social medias.
Yeah.
And then email them.
So we can email you, tag you, whatever.
Or message you so we can figure out where to send the tote bag to. Yeah. It's, you guys, it feels really weird because we recorded so many, by so many, I mean like two episodes in one week.
Okay, that's a lot. It is.
And we got so much, and I had everything like pre-set up. So like last week when our episode came out, I had nothing to do right beforehand. And I didn't know what to do with myself, and you were gone. So I feel like it's been forever since we've done podcast stuff. I mean, like, I've been looking up stuff for my next one and everything, but I'm like, I've been trying to learn the TikTok, you guys.
Oh my gosh. Real, real old. SOS.
Well, I feel real old. All I've been able to figure out is how to do screen recordings and post them that way. So, you know, we're playing around with that and everything. Yeah, that seems to be where the youngins are these days, right?
I guess. Yeah. Cause I'm clearly not on there. People are always like, oh, did you see that on TikTok? I'm like, huh? What?
I go through spurts of going on TikTok because I love it, but their algorithm will suck me in for like 2 hours. I'm just gonna look a little bit. They know what they're doing. And then the next thing I know, it's like midnight and I was on for way too long. Mm-hmm. But I get lost in it. And so I go through spurts of TikTok where it's like I don't get on it for forever.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll get on it and I'll be on it for way too long.
Yeah, that's
so.
I mean, I can't even say that that's what happens to me because I don't know how to even do it. I have it because when people send me videos, it'll open up in the app. And that's about it. I'm like, okay, now what do I do? Do I like this? I don't know.
Yeah.
Kyla sends me a lot of them and I never know how to like do them back. So, you know.
And then I'm bad because I have a friend who will like message me some through TikTok and then it'll be like 2 weeks or more since she sent them. And I'm like, oh, I'm the worst. I'm sorry. Okay. I need to set up notifications or something. I went down that rabbit hole this week. I mean, with everything, I won't get too much into it. I'm sure a lot of people are feeling the same, but with all the government BS that went on this week, and like I lost myself in TikTok to try to just zen myself out. So then I was like, okay, we should probably do a TikTok page.
Yeah, TikTok's the way to be. You can find everything on TikTok. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I personally do enjoy a good dog video on there.
Listen, okay, so I was already thinking because our sibling dogs are going to be one in a week.
Yes, they are, you guys.
So I was like, oh, we need to get them together. Or like, I'm like, if I take a video of Wick and you take a video of Remy and maybe I can figure out how to put them together and TikTok it.
Yes, that maybe would be super cute.
If I can figure out how to do that.
I was born as a dog. I identify as a dog. But according to my mom, I'm just a baby. My dogs are literally staring at me right now like, shut the F up, lady. Oh my gosh. So, yeah,
I need to play with that a bit more.
For the record, when we say our sibling dogs, for those of you who are not aware, we don't just like say they're siblings because we're like BFFs, but they're like, they're legit siblings, okay?
They're legit siblings, yes. It's a true story. It's so funny because they look so different because their mom is a Doberman and their dad is a Golden Doodle. So I call them Goober Doodles.
And I enjoy that very much. Everyone laughs when I say that. I can't even take credit for it because you came up with that.
I just say it now because like I know the person we got them from called them Dober doodles, but I'm like, you're leaving out the golden completely.
Oh, yeah.
They're goober doodles. And so
and
now
they are kind of goobers, so.
Wick is for sure a goober. Oh, my goodness. I
they
love
the
that.
Turds. Mine looks like a Doberman. Yes. And Cassie's
Wick looks like an
looks
Irish
like...
wolfhound.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because he doesn't look like a doodle. He's like, he reminds me of like the shaggy dog, like the kind of scraggly little guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, he's so sweet. But they have the saddest eyes ever.
They do. They try to guilt you into everything.
Yeah, and it works because they're freaking adorable. And I love them. And we're obsessed with them. And I have Cassie to thank because she found these dogs and then was like, oh my gosh, there's so many. You need one. And did I need one? Yes.
Listen,
yes, I did.
Bullied her. I bullied her into getting it. It was peer pressure. Okay, you guys. I'm not even going to lie. If you come to me and you're like, I'm thinking of getting a dog, I'm going to find you all the dogs to get.
I'm probably not done with, you know, I need a bigger house before because I have two giant dogs. I think they're huge and not
at the very least
a
fenced yard.
I mean, yeah, I don't have a fenced yard. That's what's super annoying. And so I have to take them out every time they need to go outside, which they think is way more often than it actually is. But
listen, my husband knows that if we had the room, I would bring home all the animals and he's still not convinced because we have another dog, Seamus, who about 4 years, this August will be 5 years ago.
Has it been that long?
4 years. Yeah. That he got dumped in our backyard. At the time, we didn't have a privacy fence. We just had like a 4-foot fence and he was just dumped back there. And my husband will still be like, I still think you set it up. I was like, do you think I would have had someone dump a dog that needed so much medical attention? Like, he had the worst ear infection that took forever to go away.
So what you're saying is if you and I need another dog, we need to set it up where I just happen to leave it. I guess people can't see me. I'm, you know, doing motions with my hands, but
quote unquote, leave it.
Yeah.
So it gets dumped. Yeah. Especially before we have a camera back there. Cause we've been talking about putting cameras back there, you know, and I was like, it'd be nice to know. I was like, I really did it. Like, I didn't do it, but it's kind of a genius idea.
It is. It sure is. Gosh. And he's a sweet little guy too. He reminds me of my other dog. So it's kind of funny cause they're both chunky little solid. They're just solid.
Solid.
They're solid, thick dogs.
I'm sure everyone's loving our like first 10 minutes of just
it's like
the TikTok dog hour.
Yeah.
I know. And you guys, the thing is we caught up even a little bit before we even hit record, but this is what happens when you decide to go on vacation. And
you know what? It was well worth it. And
I know.
I do have to share a funny story because clearly like true crime is always on the mind. And so my daughter and I were at this amazing pool and I had like a drink and I was trying to drink it and she went to go get back in the pool. And I was like, you can't just leave your drink here, you know? And she's like, Mom, no one's going to drink it. And I was like, no, my friend, that is not what I am concerned about. I said, people can put things in our drinks and drug us and take us. And then my daughter's eyes are just like traumatized. She's like, Mom, no one's going to do that. I said, that's what they all say until it happens. And then we're dead somewhere.
And
we were in
sad.
Vegas. So just saying.
I mean, yeah. Well,
that's definitely
and what's
possible.
Sad is that we have to like explain that to our children. Something we should have to worry about. But it's funny too, because even then while you were gone, I was texting you because for our other friend, Jordan, he was moving and he couldn't be there for his movers. Oh. So I came in and it's two men. Oh, and I'm like, listen, one of them was a little shorter and scrawnier, but I'm not going to be unrealistic about it. They could have taken me if they needed to.
Correct.
So I'm texting all the people. I'm like, this is where I am. If you don't hear from me, this is happening. And I started watching because if you guys, I posted it to our socials, but HBO has that new mini docuseries.
Oh, yes.
About the Beatrice Six. So I started watching that. I was like, my logic was if they hear me watching a murder show, they're less likely to murder me.
Absolutely. That's my thought too. You know, when you're aware, they're looking for the people that are not paying attention and don't know anything about crime things. I don't know. That's what I chalk it up to. I was like, okay, listen up, Journey. I have a true crime podcast. and I cannot be a story on the podcast. She was like, okay, mom, we're on vacation. Bye. Like, over it. But, you know.
How many of these stories take place when someone was on vacation?
Correct.
So many.
So that was my little two cents. And I was like, you know, it made me laugh because I was like, you know, it's probably fine. And did I end up leaving my drink? I did. However, then I put it in a bag. I covered it with a shirt. I covered it like all up and I put something on it so I could see if it had been moved. It wasn't. It was fine. I'm overly paranoid, but I also don't want to waste a nice drink.
Yeah, it's better to be safe. It's better to be safe.
Yeah.
But okay.
That's enough of the ranting. Sorry.
You know, with our rambles.
That's the catch-up hour with Shannon and Cassie.
You know, it's only the first 10 minutes or so. It's fine. And honestly, part of that is it's less than 10 minutes because I got to cut out our little part at the beginning before we set our intro.
Yeah, before I realized it was recording and I was like talking to my dogs. And then I said, okay, I'm ready. And Cassie said, oh yeah, it's been recording. Okay. Sorry. You know, yeah, and of course I'm like all over the place here today. So, and I'm the one telling the story today. So let's hope that I can stay on track. And I mean, you ready for it? Should I just ready?
I am. Let's dive in. Where are we at today?
Well,
this week?
So this is an interesting case because all of the players in this story are, from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. However, the crime itself happens in Iowa. So my state this week was Iowa. So when I picked this case and I was researching it, I was confused and then it went back and forth. But turns out the town that the crime happened in is very close to, it's just right across the border from South Dakota. So we're kind of double dipping today. Yeah. But we're going to classify it as an Iowa story because it happened in Iowa. So this actually happened in the Gitche Manitou State Park in Iowa. For those of you who are familiar, and a shout out to my cousin, Samantha, for telling me about this case. And her mom actually messaged me as well and told me about this case. And it made me laugh because I was like, clearly they're on the same wavelength. So thanks for that. I had not heard of this story and it's actually a pretty big case. Probably haven't heard of it because it's in the early 70s. And so let me get going here. And I guess I can kind of tell you a couple of the places that I got my research from. There is, let's see. The show is called Killer Siblings. It's a series. I'm not sure if you've heard of that.
No, but that sounds terrifying because we know my fear of
Cassie's fear of her kids killing her. But I mean, they'd have to team up, I guess. They love you too much. They would never do that. They love you.
My son does. I don't know about my daughter who was, that's why I was so quiet. She came in here and was trying to talk in the mic. Though. So
I was like waving at her and trying to talk and I can't multitask. I can't even wave and talk and stop. And,
no. You know. So that's why I was real silent there for a moment because she was in here and I was like, oh no, she's going to try to talk in that mic. And I don't want
that would have been real cute though. You know, can we ask you, Finley, what your thoughts are on this case? Okay. So Killer Siblings is the show. There's multiple seasons. So the episode that I watched was on season 2. It was episode 2 and I watched it on Peacock. So I think originally was on Oxygen or that show. I don't know if it still airs on Oxygen, but you can watch other seasons of it on Peacock. So nice. I watched that. And then there's also a book called The Gitche Girl Uncovered, the True Story of a Night of Mass Murder and the Hunt for Deranged Killers. That was written by Phil and Sandy Hammond. So I got a lot of it from that and then a lot of it from lots of different news articles. So the documentary was actually pretty good. I mean, some of it was like a little drug out, I think, but they do talk to the main witness on that. And so it's always really interesting, I think, when you get to hear the witness's testimony and all that and see them and kind of put it together. So, okay.
Was
so there's
like
kind
an,
of,
oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Was,
no,
it like
go
an,
ahead.
Was it like an hour long episode or were they like half hour things?
I think it was an hour. It was around an hour. It might've been a little longer, maybe
a
little more,
but I wonder, don't know, but sometimes I feel like with those they'll drag it out a bit to
yes. Well, and I guess by the title of it, Killer Siblings, it kind of gives you an idea of what this case, where we're going with this case. I felt like the episode more so focused on the siblings themselves than the victims. And I mean, I get it if that's what the show is about, but
right.
So I'll kind of start then with them. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about the background of this family, and then we'll jump into like the victims, the other family involved, all the things. So, okay. So this is the Fryer family that we're talking about. So in this documentary, they talk to a man who knew the family when they kind of lived around there. So the man said, about the Fryer family that he knew them back in 1955. They were your typical country bumpkin stereotype. So there was a ton of them. They had 7 boys and 6 girls.
Oh my God. That's
that poor
so
mom,
many kids.
Right? I know. Yeah. They lived out on a farm, you know, they had their own farmland. The girls were super timid, never really talked. The father, he often referred to his boys as chore boys. He never called them his sons. There was absolutely no love or affection seen at all by anybody, you know,
sounds
that knew this
like
family.
A great family.
Right. Yeah. So you can kind of see how this sets up our future of these kids.
Well, and in that time frame, like when you were a farmer, like a lot of times they had that many kids to help, like specifically to help with the farm. But I'm like, okay, but like, I don't know, like your poor wife is pregnant for so long. And then it's like the cost of having children, which is cheaper then. I don't know.
Right. But still, like by the time you have to raise them until they're even able to do the work, that's a lot of work, you know?
Yeah,
like you can't send them out there when they're born.
Well, no, but I feel like they even like at like 3 and 4 would send them out to do like little things like feed the chickens and gather eggs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's... Oh man, the good old days. Now the chores include like, I don't know. I was going to say charging your iPad. That's not a chore, but like just how times have changed, you know?
That's part of a reward. You get your iPad charged. You go
That's right. I'll give you
your
more
room's
screen
cleaned...
time.
Yeah. Your room's cleaned up.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, man. Okay.
I just can't imagine having that many kids.
I know. One is hard for me, okay? And so I don't know how in the world people do that, but that's a lot of kids. And clearly, yes. I guess where we're going with that is that there wasn't a lot of what am I saying? Sorry. I totally lose my train
There's
of thought.
There's not a
easily.
Lot of love.
Not a lot
there.
Of love.
Like,
yeah.
It was...
Nobody witnessed any kind of love in or around that family. So the girls never talked to, which is, you know, kind of a sign too of being controlled. So the dad himself, he was controlling. The wife was scared to even speak up for the kids, and the kids were always very fearful of their father. So there's several kids in that family, as we know, but we're just going to focus on 3 of the boys that were known for just being really close. They hung out together all the time and often would get into trouble together. So we're going to talk about Alan, David, and James Fryer. So Alan was the oldest. He was always known for just making up stories and lying about things, and he was very outgoing. David was in the middle there, and he was just always a follower, kind of quiet, not a lot, just did everything that Alan told him to do. And then James was the youngest of those 3, and he was always just very violent. People said it was probably because of the lack of love from his father. And even at the age of 9, he stole a car. Didn't really elaborate on that, but I think it's just kind of like they were just...
But again,
for trouble.
At that time frame, 9-year-olds knew how to drive because they were driving tractors and stuff like
so
that.
So true.
So, I mean...
Right. Yeah. So,
I mean, stealing
know.
A car is still excessive for a 9-year-old.
Right.
But, well, there was that story of that kid, was it in Texas or something, who stole his grandma's car or something like that and then wrecked it because he
wanted
a
toy. I feel like this
toy.
Is vaguely familiar. Was it recent?
I'll have to find it within the last few years.
I feel like this is vaguely familiar,
or like
but I don't know enough.
Or he stole his mom's car because he wanted to go to his grandma's or something like that. Yeah, I'll have to send that to you later. Because that was another young kid. I think he was like 10.
That's crazy.
Or something.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. So yeah, he stole that car. Don't know whatever happened. That's just a little snippet of his life. So the brothers were all 10 years apart. So because, I mean, with that many siblings, there's quite the spread of
So he age. Would have been 9, and then the middle one would have been 19 at that time, and then the oldest that they all hung out was 29.
You know, when I wrote that, I was thinking that, and then I thought, I wonder when I read that if that just meant there was a 10-year gap total between them. I don't know.
Because I was like a 29-year-old hanging out with his 9-year-old brother.
I know.
But with that many kids... I bet you it was a 10-year gap total somehow.
I think so too. And like, I could have looked up their birthdays, but quite frankly, I just did not care enough because
that's fair.
They kind of
suck. They're clearly the perpetrators. So,
yeah. So they were close. We'll just go with that. Age wise, still 10 years is a pretty big, you know, spread between them both, or all three, whatever. So they would steal things often and they were always just planning on what kind of trouble they could get into next. They literally had no emotions. They lacked that completely. No remorse, anything. So
when you're lacking any sort of love or attention, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of
given. It's pretty sad. So in 1967, David, who's the middle one there, he was actually arrested for driving around with a shotgun, just shooting at people. It didn't say if anyone ended up getting shot at this point, but he was arrested and clearly insane. They were like super proud of their shotguns and would always like go hunting even out of season. They would go. They didn't care. They would always be like polishing their guns and like just so trashy.
That's one thing. But to just take it out, like, fine. I mean, it's not good. But going hunting out of season is one thing. Driving mm-hmm. around and shooting at people is completely different.
Yeah, sure is. And I mean, like, he's lucky no one got killed. And I don't know if he, you know, what came of that, but... Clearly,
I feel like
just
that should be an attempted murder charge.
One would think. I don't know. It didn't even say, because I looked it up more, like, and it just said that he had gotten arrested. And then it jumps in more, like, everything I found just jumps into the actual case that we're
crime.
Talking about.
Yeah.
So I think there might be more to that. If anybody knows or wants to look that up, feel free. But I don't have that info. But that kind of just shows you the kind of people that they are, the way they were raised. All the things. So, okay. So now that we've got their background kind of done, we're going to talk about the crime and the victims involved. So the crime itself actually takes place on November 18th of 1973. It was the week before Thanksgiving. So the weather was mild and the crime itself is going to take place, I mentioned before, at Gitche Manitou State Park. So that's located in Northwest Iowa and it's only a few miles east of South Dakota. So
okay,
very close. It's like here in Council Bluffs type thing for us, like right. Iowa's right across, maybe even closer than that actually. But all of our victims are from Sioux Falls. So they go to Gitche Manitou Park. So this isn't like your typical just park. I mean, it's a state park, you know, so it's kind of a wildlife area, woods, trees, prairie, etc., all the things. So, there's 5 teenagers and they all decided that they wanted to spend the evening there, just have a little campfire, play the guitar and maybe smoke a little pot. You know, it's 1973. That's what you right. do. So 4 of them don't survive the evening, but one does. And that's where we get most of this information about what actually happened. So, and the surviving witness they refer to as the Gitche girl. So that's what the book is all about. And it's all about her testimony and stuff. So,
okay.
So the teenagers that are involved, Roger Esom, he was 17. Stuart Beatty was 18. Dana Beatty was 14. And Michael Hadrath was 15. So they were all boys. And Sandra Chesky was 13 and she was actually dating Roger, which I was like, 17, 13. Roger? Yeah. Roger was 17. I mean, I don't know back then, whatever.
It's still a little, yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of like, wait, what? I had to go back and reread that 3 different times to see who was what. So Stuart and Dana were brothers. And then the other 2 guys were, you know, just friends, and Sandra was with Roger. So they were all really good kids and you know what? So what if they wanted to smoke a little pot, like we said, you know? So that was just what they were going to do, not getting into any trouble, really. I mean, so they decided to go out there. It was like late at night. They got there at about 10:30. There wasn't anyone around the area that they were at. So they get there, they get a little fire started. Stewart plays guitar. So he's playing guitar. They're singing and they roll up a little joint. So about a half hour after they got there, they heard some noises like twigs breaking, kind of snapping. And Roger yelled out, "Who's there?" a few different times. No one responded, but they kept hearing things. So they were kind of creeped out because all they knew was that they were out there by themselves. But also, I think, like, if they had been smoking, probably overly paranoid too, you know? So,
well, clearly it could have been Bigfoot.
Or could have been aliens too, Cassie. Maybe they touched down. Okay,
real quick off topic. I need to send you a video I saw today of someone's security camera catching this little alien thing walking across their thing.
Send it my way. I'm all about will. That. Okay.
I will.
So it was not Bigfoot, turns out. Yeah. So
I figured we weren't going that route, but
I know.
One can hope.
I mean, you know, maybe one day I'll surprise you and you'll just be caught way off guard. Okay. So Roger yells, "Who's there?" No one responds. So he decides to go check it out. He kisses Sandra and tells her, "I'll be right back." So he goes to investigate. And a few moments later, gunshots just ring out. So Roger had been shot and instantly killed. So Mike immediately shoves Sandra down as they hear another shot ring out. Stuart starts screaming, "I've been shot." All of this was happening so quickly. And at the same time, they see three men approaching their campfire. One was tall, one was skinny, and one was like a big guy. I mean, those are very broad descriptions, but that's just how they described them. So, the big guy said he was the boss, and they told them that they were cops, like they were specialized narcotic agents, and they were there because the teens were smoking pot. They weren't uniformed, and Mike put his hand up.
Also, since when do cops, I mean, they're
right.
Not
I mean, the 70s.
Since when do cops shoot people on sight? But that's a whole other thing.
Correct.
But they're not supposed to shoot you instantly for smoking pot.
Correct. Especially pot. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so they're not in uniforms or any of the things. Mike puts his hands up to say, you know, like, we don't have anything, like, we're not armed, whatever. And they immediately shoot him in the hand.
Oh.
So, yeah. So then they tell them to go up to the trail where they had parked their van that they had brought. And we're going to go into more details about this later. This is kind of just the brief summary of what happened. Mm-hmm. Because they had brought their van there. And so they all walk up there. And when they get up to the van, there's also a pickup that's like parked up there. So the boss, as he referred to himself, he told Sandra to get in the truck and that the boys were going to go in the van to the police station. And as Sandra got in the truck, she looks back. They tied her up in the truck and she sees the boys walking away from the van. So he drives off with Sandra in the truck, just the two of them. And there were some conflicting stories too on this, because then I read another place that she had been put in the van and he took the van. And I don't, not that that's really
either way,
important.
She was separated from the boys.
Just in case people are like, that's not what happened. So she was separated. Yes. Not sure which vehicle. So as he's driving her around, he's just lying and telling her stories. And he told her that those weren't real guns that they had been shooting. They were just tranquilizer guns. And
that
they just
somehow
had
made part of his hand disappear after
and
it
blood
got
everywhere.
Shot in blood.
Correct. So, and she still at this point, nobody really, none of them knew that Roger had been shot because they just heard the shots and they didn't see him. So she's still under the assumption that these guys are actually cops. And I want to be like, duh, but also they're 13 and 15 and, you know, they're young and
have been smoking weed.
Right. And they have guns and you don't want to think some random people, like, you want to believe they're still good in the world. Like, some guys aren't just going to come out and shoot you. I mean, yeah, the cops shouldn't shoot you either, but that's beside the point. So
yeah,
he's telling her that that's kind of what was going on. And he told her that she was too young to get into trouble. So he was just going to take her home. So he drives her, though, to this really like sketchy, creepy farm that looks completely abandoned. So she gets there and sees the van and thinks that they're meeting up with the others, or, you know, the truck, whichever. So they get there and she sees the other two men that had been with the guy, the boss that she was driving around with. So when they get there, he goes around, opens her door, proceeds to get on top of her and rapes her.
I wondered if it was going that route.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I should have gave a trigger warning on that. It doesn't talk about that part too much. So, yeah, I mean, that part, thankfully we can just kind of brush through because nobody wants to hear about that. But, when they do talk to her later on, she says that she just tried to leave her body and she just mentally floated away and watched it happen from above. Oh. And, you know, you hear that so often when people tell those stories, it's like, mm-hmm. it's just crazy though, how your body can react to that. I mean, to know, to like separate it, not to be in that moment. It's just sad. And so after the sexual assault took place, he takes her home. He drives her home. It's about 4 or 5 in the morning at this point. And he tells her that if she tells anybody about what went down, he will kill her. So, of course, she's like sketched out and doesn't know. She's assuming her friends are home, you know, all the things. So now we go to the next day. So there's a couple that's out at the park. They were test driving a car or a new car or something, it said. Not that that matters, but they were out there for whatever reason. And as they're out there, they see 3 figures lying down. So they approach, and as soon as they get close, they see blood and realize that they are bodies. And so they contact the authorities. They get there and determine that they were all dead, and they were teenage boys that had been shot by a shotgun at a very close range. It even mentioned that the holes were huge in their bodies.
Yeah, shotgun blasts.
Especially close.
If they're close, they'll be huge.
So... yeah. And they could tell that they had been dragged across gravel into a grass area, that they had not died in that spot. So upon discovery and searching, about 100 yards away, they found a 4th body next to the campfire that the teens had been hanging out at. So the cops were completely stumped and they didn't understand why 3 of them were separated from the other body. There were no vehicles. The van was gone. They didn't know how they got there. They just knew nothing. They had found...
How did the kids get there earlier? Did they walk?
They had got the van. They brought their van. Sorry, I should have mentioned that part earlier. I talk about it later, so... but they had like a big Chevy van.
So the van was the kids.
The kids, and they took that. Yeah.
Gotcha. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, that was confusing. I should have mentioned that earlier.
No, but you're good. You're good. I thought the brothers had brought the van and stuff. Okay, I see what you're saying.
So they were all in the truck together. Yeah. So gotcha. The van is gone, though, now. So they're like, where did these kids come from? We don't know. So they, at the scene, too, they found several shotgun shells. They appeared to be from a 12-gauge, 20-gauge, and possibly a 16-gauge. And so it was obvious that 3 different weapons had been used, so they weren't sure if they were looking for 3 different shooters or someone with 3 different guns. It's just kind of insane. So once they identify all the victims, they were even more confused because they found out that these kids were just like super good kids and that none of it really added up. Michael Hadrath was really, he was known for having a huge heart. Stuart was super laid back and really proud of his beat up Chevy van that they rode in. Said that he gave rides to anyone and everyone that needed a ride. He played guitar. That's cute. I know. He played guitar, and his younger brother, Dana, who was also one of the victims, he adored Stuart, and Stuart was teaching Dana how to play the guitar. Aww. And then, I know. And Roger, it said he was just full of personality, always smiling. So there's nothing that suggests any sort of
like anyone issues, would want to like, hurt them.
Right. Well,
and Mike, you said he pushed the girl to the ground when he heard the shots. So, I mean, that just shows clearly what protective kind of person he, yeah, like
And it even said that I was going to put this in there, but I was like, it's so many details. But when he had pushed her down after that shot, then one of the men pulled them up and said, you're playing dead. Get up. I'm like, pulled him up and stuff, because so I don't know if he was telling her, like,
yeah, play, you know, dead,
stay down or what. But yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
So sounds like just super good kids. And I mean, from a small place, Sioux Falls, is it big? It definitely wasn't like big then in the 70s, right. You know? So after 20 hours after the crime had happened, they still had nothing to go off of. It never said at this point that they realized that somebody else was with them, Sandra, because I don't think the parents necessarily knew who all was going. They were just going to hang out. So, and Sandra did not know at this point either that they were gone, because,
well, it's not like you have the news, the media, right, that's the what same I was gonna way say. You do now.
Right. And so, you know, and she's traumatized too. I mean, she had just gotten assaulted, and so that's hard enough. So eventually, like I said, 20 hours later, and I think it's before they even have shared on the news who the victims were. They just obviously kept that between themselves and the families at that point. So that's when Sandra shows up at the police station. So she shows up and says that she wants to report that she had witnessed a crime. She still didn't know at this point that her friends were dead. So she told the police about the men and how they said that they were the police and they separated her from her friends. And so after she shares this part of the story, they put her and her family in protective services because they had no idea who had done this and they were still at large.
And they obviously know where she lives.
Right. And so she was able to describe the men enough for them to make a composite sketch. And she was super confident that she would be able to identify them or him, whoever they caught at this point. And she was even able to describe the pickup that she had been transported in and to the farm area that she was taken to. And they even said that she was so blunt, and because she had remembered so many details at only the age of 13, that they really questioned her credibility at that time. Yeah. And I'm like, that's sad that even back then, like, they were, well, like,
especially back then in the 70s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Now that we've reverted back to the 50s in 2022, anyways, definitely in the 70s, they were like, now, I don't know here, little Missy. Are you sure you know what you're talking about?
Because I think she had went to report the rape. I read a lot of different things too, and so I just completely left that part out because she was obviously going in to testify to something. Yeah. So she's there. So they interviewed her then several different times, different people, and her answers never changed. And they even made her take a polygraph test, and she passed that. So just stupid. But
you guys can't see it, but I rolled my eyes. Yeah, so hard.
Because it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yes.
So then by Monday, because that was on what, Saturday night, Sunday, whatever, they do find Stewart's van, and it was located just in a truck lot in Sioux Falls. So there was nothing incriminating in it. They checked for fingerprints. Nothing was found. So that didn't do a whole lot, but they were able to draw like a grid and kind of made a map of an area that they were looking for, you know, anything. And so they handed that out to people to just keep an eye out for anything in that area. And if they noticed any of these specific features, you know, as far as like the farmland, the truck, to let them know. So then 2 days later, so on November 19th, this is when the news releases the names of the victims. So at this point, nobody had known what was going on, but everyone is terrified because 4 teenage kids killed.
Small town, everyone knows something has happened.
Yes. And nobody knew who did it. Were these men going to come after their families? Right. You know, they didn't know if it was a personal thing or what. So everybody was just on edge. And it was Thanksgiving week too. And so that made things even harder and just yuck. You know, I'm like, that's supposed to be like a fun, special time and your kids are gone. You don't know who's going to come kill you. Like,
yeah. Just did scary. It ever say, is there a reason why they left her alive? Like, were they just not willing to kill a girl, or?
I don't know. It taught, well, they just said what I kind of had found was that they just said she was too young to get into trouble. So
what about Dana?
I know. A year older than her. Yeah. So I don't know. It didn't really say. I mean, had they killed her, it's like they probably could have gotten away with it because she was literally the person who sealed the deal, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll look in my notes here too. I can't remember if I typed some of that up or not. Like, yeah. I was doing this very late at night. And so, yeah. Okay. So they were looking just day and night too at this moment. And Sandra was determined to find out who had done this to her friends. And they just described Sandra as tough as nails. I'm like, oh, okay. Now she's tough, but a day ago she was a liar. Okay.
Right. Like, there's no way that her feminine brain could possibly remember all these details.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or like she would just make that up. So
yeah.
Then it was a couple of weeks and they still had nothing. They had just been driving around constantly looking for any sign. Sandra even just like rode around in the police cars with them, which I'm like, that's weird. But maybe back then, and then not like they probably dealt with something like this before. And they,
right.
At least she was safe because she was with them, I guess, if they look at it that way. But so then on November 29th, which was 12 days after the murders, they were driving around and she spots the farmhouse and she immediately recognizes it and identifies it. And the whole area looks abandoned. So they start to approach. And as they're approaching, a truck comes driving down the road from the farm. And Sandra saw the man driving and screamed that that was him. So the cops were actually able to stop him. He didn't try to drive off, which I'm kind of surprised knowing the background. So they pull him over and he tells him his name is Alan Fryer. And he kind of just gave up at that point and went with them. So Sandra was just overwhelmed. And it said that she was just so thankful and just could not stop crying for that he would finally pay for what he had done, which I was like, well, that's a little soon to jump to that. But a lot of these stories were not like, what's the word I'm looking for here? They just didn't run like in order of the way things happened. So some of it, I'm like, I don't know. But so, okay. So they take Alan then. They take him into custody. They interview him for 2 hours and he denies being involved. He said he would never do something like that. Then his story changed. He said that he was there with his brothers, but the teens shot at him and his brothers first. And then he said, yeah. I was like, well, that's weird because they didn't have guns. And no. So then he said, okay, well, it wasn't me. I was there, yeah, but my brothers actually shot. So these guys were known for just being petty criminals anyway. So James was currently in prison, if you remember, because he had been arrested for like 5 years before that for the shooting out with whatever. So he had been out. Or they were letting him out, though, for work release, which I'm like, I'm sorry. That's a crime that I feel like you should not be let out on work release for.
Yeah.
Different times, I guess. But so he was out for work release. So then they find out later that instead of going back to jail when he was done working that day, he had David call the jail and impersonate his boss saying he needed to work an extra shift. And they just believed that, I guess. So he
didn't decide to check up on that at all. Okay, that makes sense.
Right. I wonder who got fired after this. Who lost their job for not following up on that?
Following up on that, work release is like, no, he only gets this time.
So many times. Yes. Yeah. And if he's not back by this time, then he's in trouble. And usually they have like a
someone pick him up, right?
Monitor thing.
Yeah.
Which I guess, I don't know, back in the 70s.
I'm in the 70s, I don't know. Like, but you would think that they would have had an escort there and back or something. And so, like, the person would have, like, I don't know. You'd think you'd have to have some sort of better verification than that.
One would think.
I mean,
so it was easy to say, like, okay, well, he was out at this time, so it's very likely he was involved. So they do a lineup. Sandra is able to identify James as the man who raped her. She really struggled with all of that, but she had a good support team. So she did not realize at the time that the other two men were actually James's brother. So she's able to identify them as well. And then she finds out that they're brothers. So they interview David, and his story was that the teens and him and his brother, or his brothers, they were shooting back and forth, but he was not involved.
Okay.
Like, they all, like, you just stood there. They all have the same story. You know, like, they were not involved.
Is this like the old West? We're having a shootout?
Apparently. Yeah. That's what I'm like. Why would they even be shooting? They don't. No. Which we talk about that a little more, too.
They don't have guns, but yeah.
Correct. So I'm like, you could tie those guns to them anyway, to the brothers. So that doesn't even make any sense. So James was saying he was in jail, so he wasn't involved. So they're like, yeah, but you were out, because once they were able to determine what time they were shot and, you know, their time of death, they see that he had checked into the jail at 5 a.m. that morning. But he said he was actually working that whole time. They didn't say what his job was or anything, but I really doubt that he was working in the middle of the night. So
also, could we not then go to the boss and be like, hey, did you have him work this? Did you call us?
That's a pretty easy alibi to not confirm or confirm, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, to figure out if it's true or not. Yeah.
Yeah. So James said his brothers shot at the teens. He didn't. They literally all just kept blaming each other. So it's kind of funny, for being so close, they were pretty quick to throw each other under the bus and blame each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So eventually the truth does come out. So the story. So the Fryer brothers, they had gone deer hunting at Gitche Manitou Park. They were not successful, and so they were already a little bit pissed off when they spotted the unarmed teens. So they see them from afar. They can smell the pot and see that they're smoking a joint or whatever. So they decided that they wanted to go get it. So they plan to impersonate narcotic officers, and later it was testified in court that the brothers thought that agents could kill drug users. So we're not working with the sharpest crayons in the box.
Okay, but let's just say that for whatever asinine reason, it is legal for agents to kill drug users. You're still not agents.
Right. Once again,
you'd still be in trouble for murder.
Yeah, you can't just, like, kill someone, and you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, even if this was something that was true...
Right.
That they were legally allowed to, as part of their job description, they were like, hey, you can just go and kill indiscriminately as long as they use drugs.
Right. And like, pot, really? It's a little pot. Yeah. Come on. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever. So that's a good point. So that's their story there. So they decided that that's what they were going to do. So before that, they positioned themselves kind of on a ridge that was overlooking the victims. David later said, when he saw the look in Alan's eyes, he knew that Alan was going to shoot them. And that was when he opened fire. And that was when the shot rang out that hit Roger, when he was instantly killed. So this was when the teens ran to take cover when they heard the shots. So they go down there then, and the brothers ordered the teens all to come out. And they told them that they identified themselves as the police. So Sandra and Michael asked the brothers who they thought that they were, because they thought maybe they had wrongly identified them for someone else they were looking for. And that's when, you know, Mike puts his hand up, like, who do you think we are? And that was when he gets shot in the hand. So Alan says, you know, we're cops and we're taking your dope and we're throwing you in jail. So that's when Stuart kind of comes out, and then they all get forced to walk to the van. So they walk that way. And once Sandra left in the truck with the boss, all the boys were shot.
Oh,
yeah. So she had no idea. And the last thing she had seen was them walking away. So just awful. So the guys, the men, the brothers, we'll call them that. I don't even want to call them men, because, like, really, what kind of man?
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So they were all charged with first-degree murder. Sandra was really upset because she really wanted that rape charge to, which I get, but they were like, he's at least getting, like, the ultimate punishment, so there's no need to subject you to a rape trial. But still, okay. Yeah.
If she's willing, though.
Right. I agree, too. And I saw that a couple different spots. I was like, so what? Like, you still want that on his record to show that he did that.
Yeah. Like, you still want him punished for it. Yeah. Like, he's being punished for murder, as he should be, but he should be punished for the rape, too.
It's like, it was just, like, a free thing for him that he got to do.
Yeah. And like I said, like, if she was like, I really don't want to testify, then fine, I can see them not adding that. But if she was like, no, I want to testify.
Yeah.
Like, let her.
And she was. Let her. So, yeah. So, the community, they're all relieved. You know, the brothers were caught. They were locked up. David went ahead and just pled guilty to just avoid even going to trial. So he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So to which that he said, no, if all my appeals fail, I'll actually write the governor and ask for the death penalty. I will not live out my life in jail. Keeping me locked up for life can't turn around what happened. It can't bring those people back. Okay. So, yeah, which,
that's where I'm torn on the death penalty, because there's a part that's like, why should you get all this free shit and everything, and why should we pay for that? But then another part is like, no, you
should. That's an easy way out.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's pretty sad when they, they get treated pretty good in there. I saw something the other day about how, this is side tangent, you know, school lunches have been free for everybody since the pandemic. Yeah. And now,
of course,
most
my child
places
will not eat the school lunch, but yes.
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah. I'm like, you're going to eat it. You're going to like it. No, they have like five choices too. I'm like, we never had choices anyway. Well, now that they're getting rid of that, I saw where someone had posted, like, if all these inmates in jail get to eat for free, like, hell, my kid's not going to eat for free. Like, if we can feed all of them. And I'm like, you know what? You got a good point. So
yeah,
it just is what it is. But yeah, that's just another, that's for another time. So
yeah, another podcast episode, a different type of podcast,
right? The tangent episode. No. So in 2016, he asks the parole board to overturn the without possibility of parole part of a sentence. And it was denied after a testimony from Sandra and Mike Hadrath's sister. So he's still living up his life there. So then the other two, so they went to trial 3 months later in Rock Rapids, Iowa. Sandra did testify, and it was her testimony, they said, that was instrumental in bringing justice. It only took the jurors 5 hours before they found them guilty. And I don't, obviously they couldn't have had like a trial together. It didn't say whose trial, which was what, I don't know.
They could have, they could have had them tried together.
Back in, did they do that back then? Like, I guess, I don't even know. I've never like seen that or heard that, but I guess if it was the same crime too, because they were both being charged with four counts. It could, so maybe.
And if they weren't testifying against each other or anything like then they,
why
they
go through it all twice?
Yeah. They very well could have done it together. Yeah.
So they were both sentenced to life without parole as well. So you would think that that's kind of where it's over, but June 20th, before they were transferred to a different prison, Alan and James used a wire that was from their bed. They used it as a ratchet to escape, to get out of their cell.
First of all, why were they in the same cell together?
Right. I don't know. Like, and these guys are known for just causing issues. So like, why are they together? I mean, 70s. Yeah. I just keep chalking it up to the 70s, but at what point is that not an excuse?
So, I mean,
So they escape, they steal a car, and we're on the run. So immediately, Sandra and her family get put back into protective custody, as you would expect. So,
I mean, at least they're doing something right.
I know. Yeah. That part I was like, they were pretty quick to jump on that. I'm glad they did, but
yeah,
whatever. So, you know, they put out a report to every, you know, cop, police station, whatever, all the things within a certain radius. And they actually, they catch them about 500 miles away in Gillette, Wyoming. So they made it pretty far.
Yeah.
And they were actually stopped at a roadblock and taken back into custody. So now they face federal charges, because they're idiots and decided to cross state lines and So then, you know, they get taken back and all that, and it gets determined. I don't know. Some of these facts, I feel like they're very choppy and don't fit in certain places. I don't know when this happened, but I thought it was important to note that James They determined at this point he has an IQ of 85 and very poorly controlled behavior. That literally was in every part where I read that they escaped, then that part was in there. So I'm like, I don't know if that was like, they tested it after that. Like, clearly right. This was an issue for his whole life. I'm going
to
go with
right. But, unless they were like, defense was trying to be like, he has poor judgment.
Yeah. I don't that's know. Probably what it was. Just to save him from the death penalty. So yeah. Whatever. But so all of their appeals fall through throughout all the years. So Alan is serving his life sentence at the penitentiary in Anamost, Iowa. David and James are both serving their sentences in the Fort Dodge Correctional Facility in Fort Dodge, Iowa. They were all categorized as sociopaths, which I will give you the definition there again for people. That's person with a personality disorder manifesting itself in an extreme antisocial attitude and behavior and a lack of conscience. So Sandra was really known as the courageous hero who demanded justice. And she has done several interviews since this has all happened. I mean, she's a grown adult now. And, you know, she's still fighting for things, and she just her story's pretty interesting on that documentary because they talked to her a lot and she talks through everything that happened, and
I would watch it just to hear what she has to say.
And I think that that was good. I mean, I felt like they focused on the brothers a lot just because of the fact that the show's called that, Killer Siblings, but right. It was pretty interesting in that book. I have not read the book, but that's kind of where I first heard of this case because someone had sent me the link then for the Gitche Girl because that's what they referred to her as. And then that's when I pieced together that it's the state park that's called that. So just a really sad story. Yeah, we'll post all that.
Yeah, we'll post those to the description of the podcast and stuff. So, cause yeah, that sounds, I would like to hear more of her about her and stuff. I mean, obviously about the victims too, but yeah, with that stuff, I mean, when it's a show called Killer Siblings, you know, they're going to focus on that.
Right. Well, and it sucks because like when cases are old and you don't have a lot of that social media from the victims to see like, oh, they posted this and they did this and loved this. Like, you know, I'll post pictures of all those boys, of course, and Sandra, and it's, I mean, you Google her and it's like, you can find all sorts of clips of videos and stuff. So even if you don't watch the documentary and you just Google her, it's pretty cool. And for her to speak out about something like that, that's just like traumatizing, and knowing that, I mean, they're all locked up is good, but it's scary. The fact that they escaped once, I mean, I would hope now things are a little tighter as far as security, but you know. So yeah, that's the story of the Gitche Manitou State Park. I just really like saying Gitche Manitou. It's just a,
I mean, that's, yeah, that's
say
fun.
That five times, right? Best, whatever. But yeah, it's very sad though.
Get yourself out of that state park, apparently.
Oh, get you right out of there. Okay. Okay. We got the name for this episode. Get you out of that park.
Yes. You know, I've been thinking about that since you started saying it.
I know, man. Should have.
Not that I'm making light of the tragedy that happened there.
Correct. But no.
But yeah, I love a good dad joke.
Yeah. And that's what we're here for, is to enjoy conversation. Yes. And yeah, we're talking about heavy things and stuff, but like, doesn't change the fact that we're funny, okay?
We think we're
maybe
funny
to
anyways.
Each other. That's it.
Yeah.
We think we're funny.
Well, that's it's so hard, you know, to be like, and that was the end. You know, I think for us it's I don't want to end on, you know, we want to end still too on like a lighter note. Like, I'm so glad that Sandra survived and she's doing so much. Like, that's fantastic. Like, what a strong woman and what a strong young
Can
girl
you
she
imagine?
Was.
I mean, well, thankfully she didn't see them get
the
shot. Yeah. I mean, she had to assume, I guess, Roger, when they heard the gunshot and then he didn't come back. But yeah, so at least she did not hear or see, witness that. But just being assaulted at that such a young age is awful too. So, I mean,
yeah,
I'm glad that she survived and I'm glad that they're locked up. And
me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just, that's.
That is that. So yeah, guys, definitely reach out with, you know, stories. Like that's how I got this one. Cause this story was shared with me. So, any of the stories, you can email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com. Any of our socials, follow us on TikTok now. What's our,
it's also thing? Heartland Darkland Podcast.
Okay. I should know that. I'm like, I don't know. Cassie does the things.
I created it while you were gone.
Yeah.
So, or like right before you left or something.
I don't even know how to like follow things yet on there. So.
Listen, I know.
I'll find it. So. But yeah, no, so that's
all the social medias. Yeah. Don't forget to rate interview, please, you guys. It helps us a ton.
It really does.
Then we can get you in. Just let us know. Shoot us an email or DM us at any of our social medias to let us know you've done that. Mm-hmm. We'll get you in for our drawing. But the drawing does end at 11:59 p.m. on June 30th of 2022.
Not going to take That's it not if to it's say... at 12 o'clock. Just kidding. I would.
I mean, but
I mean, it's not gonna, that won't happen. Someone will do it just to be a smart ass, but it's
right.
Whatever.
But you guys, so, and then we'll draw, you know, with 4th of July is coming up. We got it. We'll have to talk and figure out how to do the whole, how can we record the drawing and post it to social media?
Yeah. It'll be good. I think stuff. I know how to do it. That's one thing I do know how to do. So
fantastic. Well, you do our like images and stuff and I do the like posting.
Yeah. We're a good team.
It works. It works out. Yeah.
Sure
I just
does.
Have to figure out some of these other things with the Tiki Talk.
The Tiki of the Talk. The Tiki Talk.
I feel like such an, I was like, it's wow, now I feel weird. Real old trying to learn it.
I know. And I don't even feel like we're that old. But then when stuff like that keeps coming and when my kid knows how to use it and I don't, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm in trouble. I'm that old person now.
You know, it happens. But anyways, you guys, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.